probably know, our family was just this week returned from a vacation, being away for 2 weeks. We were on the East Coast and visiting family most of the time. My family lives on the East Coast. So we saw my parents and my brother and his family, and my aunt and uncle and cousins came out, and we saw them. And we even, my two boys met their third cousins, which I thought was really cool. I mean, how many of us know our third cousins? I never met these two third cousins before either, but anyway. So it was a good time. And you know how families are. Maybe your family is like this, or close friends, particularly if you haven't seen one another for a long time. There's all that talking, all that catching up, you know, like, oh, and how is so-and-so, and whatever happened to such-and-such, and, you know, and, oh, how is so-and-so doing, and what's going on with, you know. And so there's all that talking and catching up and sort of newsy stuff. And in our family, is pretty honest most of the time, you know. And I'm all for honesty. Honesty is always good. And an example of what I'm talking about is, you know, this is totally hypothetical. You know, if I were to say, well, how's Sally? The response might be, well, you know, Sally's okay, but, you know, she's put on quite a bit of weight. Now, I want to be clear that I'm not talking about anybody actually named Sally. I'm just totally making this up. But that's, you know, that's the kind of honesty that I'm talking about. And among families and among friends, we often have that kind of just sort of honesty about, you know, just how life is. What I noticed on this trip, that sometimes that degree of, you know, honesty or letting it all hang out or whatever can kind of go a little bit further into an area that's maybe not so helpful. To use that same example, well, how is Sally? Well, you know, she's okay. Well, she's put on a lot of weight. You know, I think she's depressed. Her husband goes away on these business trips for 2 and 3 weeks, and I don't know if he's having an affair or something, but, you know, she's depressed, and that's why she's so heavy. Okay. We've obviously gone way past the line of honesty and being clear to, you know, wild conjecture and really unhelpfulness. And I obviously made the example pretty egregious. But you get the idea, right? That could all be said under the rubric of honesty, because it is probably, honestly, what the speaker thinks. Whoever is speaking probably does think all that stuff. But we've really rendered, you know, entered the realm of complete conjecture and unhelpfulness. Just not helpful. So that line can be, in the example, it was sort of obvious, but the line in real life can be kind of hard to get to between honesty and maybe not so helpful. And I think that that might be one of the things that James is talking about in his letter this morning. So we hear James talking about the tongue and how much damage the tongue can do and how evil the tongue is, even such a small member, and it can, you know, have such a great effect. And the best image that he uses, the one that I like the best, is especially resonant for us in this state, the one about the great fire. You know, a great forest can be burned down with just a little fire. And how often does that happen in California? Just one lightning strike or one arsonist, maybe. But if we apply that, we can see, you know, sometimes the things that we say, we might not be meaning any harm. We might just be, you know, chatting with our friends, can grow and grow and kind of get all bent out of shape and turn around and get to the wrong place. And I think that's what James is warning us about. It's easy not to just, you know, out and out lie. I mean, I won't say that the sky is green. It's easy not to say that. But beyond that, there's that other level of communication that's maybe a little harder to find that line in between what's helpful and honest and what's a little bit too far, or a lot too far. Look, for an example of good communication, look at the gospel today. We have Jesus walking with his disciples. And he's talking to them and asking questions. This is all very open. Who do people say that I am? Oh, you know, the Elijah, the prophet. Then he says, well, who do you say that I am? Peter says, you're the Messiah. And Jesus says, okay, well, just let's keep that under our hats, shall we? Jesus says, don't tell anybody about that. But he's sort of clear about what he wants to be spread around. And then he goes on, again openly, to say, and this is what's going to happen. A son of man will be rejected, and so on and so forth, and arrested and tried and killed, and in 3 days will rise again. Well, Peter, understandably, was upset to hear this kind of thing. But Peter does a smart thing. He doesn't just right here in front of everybody say, hey, Jesus, you've got to stop talking like that. Oh, what does he do? He takes Jesus aside and privately says to him, this is too much, or whatever. We don't know exactly what he says. And Jesus, again, we're apart from the disciples. Jesus, I have this visual image, right? Here's Peter, here's Jesus, here's the disciples. Jesus turns toward the disciples. So in a way, he's turning his back on Peter. And at the same time, he says, get behind me, Satan. So he's kind of visually doing what he's saying. And he doesn't broadcast his comment to the disciples. He's still just talking to Peter, right? He's not saying, hey, you guys, did you hear what Peter said? What an idiot this guy is. No, it's still a private conversation, but it's very clear. Jesus makes very clear what he wants and what he doesn't want, and he talks to Peter. And then he goes back and speaks more and more, in fact, openly to the crowds. It's just a great example of open communication, not talking, you know, asking people to, well, keep this one keep under your hat, but this is what I'm telling you all about, you know. Son of man, 3 days, and all that. This type of communication, and the type of communication that James is advising, actually, along with pretty much everything that we do, I think can become a habit. You know, whether our habit is being honest or you know, going right up to that line or crossing over the line or being unhelpful or whatever, or any other kind of habit, we develop these habits through the course of our lives, and then we kind of follow those habits, whatever they are, good or bad. We all know that our habits are kind of with us all the time. And at moments of crisis or of upheaval or change, our habits stay with us. And I think that is what we're learning about in this morning's first reading, a reading from Proverbs. We heard about wisdom personified. She's going through the streets, she's shouting from the rooftops, hey, why won't anybody pay any attention to me? Look at me, I'm wisdom. You need this. And nobody pays any attention. So she says, well, fine. See you later. When you come looking for me, I'm not going to be there. When you're, you know, in trouble and you want wisdom, well, I'll be somewhere else. And I'm not going to come when you call. Now, we have to be careful with this reading, I think, because a lot of times in the Old Testament, wisdom personified is seen as an image of the Holy Spirit. So one part of one person of the Trinity. And so we could say, some might say, well, so this is about God. But I would say we need to be careful about that. We need to be careful about that because I don't believe that God would turn God's back on us at a time of crisis. In fact, here's what I believe. I believe that first part of the image of wisdom, you know, stomping around in the streets and shouting from the rooftop, that's pretty accurate. I think God does that all the time. I think that God constantly tries to get our attention in all different ways, always, always trying to invite us into a deeper relationship, into a more intimate relationship, and saying, hey, I'm over here. Hey, look at that. Hey, I'm right here. Hello. And most of the time, we don't even God never stops trying. 20 years, 50 years, 100 years, it doesn't matter. God will never stop trying to get our attention, to invite us into deeper relationship, into closer relationship. And if that only happens when we hit some kind of crisis and we turn around and say, you know, I never noticed you until now, God will be there saying, but here I am. It's not the same as wisdom in the wisdom passage. What that's about, I think, is the way the world often works in terms of our habits, our way of being in the world. Perhaps our, well, for lack of a better word, our wisdom. If we have wise habits, or if we seek wisdom in general, or if we have, you know, helpful, life-giving habits or ways of being in the world, those will be with us when some kind of crisis comes. Those habits will stay with us. On the other hand, of course, we all have habits that we regret a little bit or think are maybe not the healthiest habits we could have in our lives. Those habits will still be with us when some kind of crisis comes. And even if we know better, even if we think to ourselves, well, I know that the best way of handling a crisis of this sort would be if I could breathe deeply and relax and, you know, meditate through this crisis, keep myself calm. Well, we don't have a habit of doing that. We're not all of a sudden going to develop that habit when a crisis strikes. So I think that's what wisdom is telling us this morning. Of course, one of those habits is the way we communicate, but it's all kinds of other things. Yeah, the ways that we live our lives. So I think our invitation today is to follow the example of Christ. Follow the example of the disciples. Take James's advice and walk in the ways of wisdom.